The endless parade of time. Who can say what fruits the future will see ripen? We can only keep looking towards
tomorrow's world with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
This week, Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins discuss the rise of synthetic diamonds, looking at market pressures, the energy consumption of the synthetic process, and they also get into the science of how diamonds form as carbon under pressure.
Hi, Earthlings. Welcome back to another episode of Tomorrow's World. I'm Stella Huggins.
And I'm Isla Christensen. This is our segment all about exploring how science affects individuals and our future on planet Earth.
We've discussed topics such as circular economies, marine protected areas, and future diets.
Last time, we talked to the incredible Dr. Nikki Hare about the controversial new reality TV show, All About Activism, which has since been pivoted to a documentary.
We also looked at Nikki's work on the infinite game, which is the idea that sustainable communities can be imagined only when long-term issues are prioritised.
This week, inspired by seeing multiple lockdown proposals, we're talking about the future of diamonds.
Often known as a girl's best friend.
Or for stirring up social debates around ethical concerns after watching Blood Diamond.
We wanted to know what the future holds for diamonds, especially as synthetic or lab-grown diamonds seem to be becoming more popular.
We talked to Dr. Jeff Wilmot, who has done his PhD on natural diamond properties and now works with nano and microfluids.
Dr. Wilmot explains the science behind the diamond bling effect, as well as providing an insight into how the strength of diamonds are used in industries.
You know, they're a one-of-a-kind mineral. They've just got these exceptional range of physical properties, and that's why people like them for jewellery. You know, they're extremely hard. They're kind of notoriously the hardest material that we find naturally occurring. And they also have interesting optical properties. So they have a higher refractive index, which means that they're shiny. And that's why people like them for jewellery, right? But they've got a whole lot of other material properties, you know, very low thermal conductivity, high sound velocity, low thermal expansion. All of these are, you know, really extreme values when you compare them with other materials. So they find a lot of other applications. The only problem is they're, of course, pretty expensive.
Awesome. And so you mentioned then they are expensive, and it is then that the properties, they're unique. But do you think into some element that it's, I guess, the social pressure that has made them so expensive? What makes these, I guess, so rare? Is it because they form over such a long time, or what is it that influences this expense?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there's some simple market economics there, right, around supply and demand and so on. But there is certainly a kind of a mystique and some marketing that has gone into it. And a really good example is Japan, where, you know, up until I think it was after Second World War, it wasn't traditional at all to use diamonds as an engagement token or ring. And now everyone in Japan does it. And that was basically off a marketing campaign from De Beers, which was the dominant diamond company at the time in the 50s and 60s. So there's a mystique and this peer pressure, of course, around engagement, particularly that, you know, you have to, there's an expectation that you have to cough up with a diamond. So those aspects do come into it, a kind of perception or marketing aspect. And I guess there's also, you know, for natural diamond in particular, there's at least reasonably widespread knowledge about how they form, you know, deep within, under the Earth's crust, and over a long period of time at high temperatures and pressures, and then come to the surface. And I think there's a bit of a mystique around that process as well.
Going into the difference then, what is the difference of a synthetic diamond or a lab-grown diamond?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, it's the same material, right? So diamond's this, you know, crystal of carbon atoms, just carbon atoms, and each carbon atom is bound to four other carbon atoms in a tetrahedron, which means it's, the bonds are all equally spaced around in three dimensions around each other. And if you make that under the Earth's crust in a natural environment, or if you make it in the lab, it doesn't make a difference, right? It's the same material. Having said that, then there are a lot of differences in how things turn out in both in nature and in the lab, but based on the way that things are made, and different impurities can creep in, you know, defects and inclusions and so on. well, let's talk about natural for a start. So natural diamonds are made, it's a geological process. So you've got this magma, this molten layer of, in the mantle, this kind of semi-molten layer of rock bubbling around, and carbon precipitates out of there to make diamond. And all the other rock around it is, of course, kind of randomly floating around. And so you get natural diamonds that have all kinds of shapes and inclusions, other minerals included within the diamond. And they're really, you know, pretty rough often when they come out of the ground and have to be worked up to make nice shiny diamonds.
I think what you say there as well, and perhaps that is the uniqueness to it, the rarity of it, that it's naturally forming, that it takes a lot of effort to get one, to produce it into this, what we see it as, either a diamond or in other aspects. I think something that might be interesting for people listening to is where diamonds are used elsewhere to jewellery, obviously for their strength in production and design. Could you maybe describe a few of those?
Yeah, and that gets into the ways that they're made synthetically. So the two major ways to synthetically make diamond, they're called high pressure, high temperature, and the other one is chemical vapor deposition. Okay, so there's two ways. And either of those ways, it's quite easy to make what you might call kind of rough or low quality diamond. In particular, high pressure, high temperature, that's, you basically simulate what's happening under the earth and you squash in a little anvil some carbon and it precipitates out. And when you're doing that, it's really easy to make small diamonds and kind of low quality diamonds. And that's the type of diamond that you find used on like diamond saws and so tools for cutting and polishing, because it'll still have pretty good properties in terms of hardness and thermal transfer as well. So it takes heat away from a cutting object, but is relatively inexpensive to make. Then the other one, the other technique for synthesizing them is chemical vapor deposition. With that method, you can get quite large scale thin films, right? So you're putting down a thin layer of diamond from a kind of gaseous atmosphere, chemical vapor deposition. So yeah, in that case, you have methane floating around in it.
Absolutely. And something that I didn't know about there is, you mentioned the methane. Is there, I guess, then looking at it from an environmental perspective or a sustainable perspective, is it producing the methane? Is it using the methane? How does that work?
Yeah, so I think, right, so if you're going to make diamond, then you need carbon as a feedstock somehow, right? So you're going to take carbon from somewhere and put it into a hard, shiny object. So I guess in that sense, it's a good way to sequester carbon. And the carbon will stick, and eventually the hydrogens will get knocked off, and this builds up and up. So that's great if we want to reduce methane in the atmosphere, of course, but it's hard to do. So you're putting in a lot of energy in order to do that. And of course, your energy has to come from somewhere. You're probably burning some coal out the back to provide the energy. So, you know, it's not about to solve climate change tomorrow, but it is methane being turned into diamond.
That's what I was thinking. We could all, you know, promote it as the way to sequester carbon, walk around with a diamond ring. And on that, I think there is a growing concern for ethical implications of how diamonds are produced and as well environmental impacts. Do you see a future of synthetic diamonds growing?
Yeah, it's really about economics more than anything. That, I mean, there are lab records for using the high pressure, high temperature technique. So that's one that you'll make a crystal rather than a film. And if you sit there and get the conditions right and put in a whole lot of energy, you know, and wait for a week, you can get a good quality diamond, which is 1 carat in size. That's 0.2 grams weight. And the record, I think, is something like 25 carats. Right. So you can grow them. But the thing about it is you're just putting so much effort in there, both in terms of the energy costs and the time you have to wait, that it's not necessarily worth it to grow those big diamonds synthetically. It's easier to go and get them out of the ground. Now, you obviously have a whole lot of geopolitical influences around getting diamond out of the ground as well. So that's not straightforward. The types of geological structures that where diamond comes from are these old continental crusts. And so it's South Africa, it's Canada, it's Russia and Australia. Those are, you know, the areas where these crusts are. And you know, mining in South Africa historically has been a bit fraught, obviously, with apartheid. And that's a lot of the history of the diamond industry has come through that. So, and then more recently, you know, further north in Africa, there've been the kind of blood diamond stories. So there's definitely an ethical implication to where we get our diamonds from, and people can make those choices about where they buy their diamond. You know, usually there's certification these days about based on either the chemical signature or some laser etching of the diamond about where its origin is, and that could be natural or synthetic.
Absolutely, thank you so much. And I guess just to end, if there is any diamond information that we haven't asked you about, share anything else.
There's lots. They're more common in space, you know. It's easier to make them in space. And it's been figured out about 10 years ago that it's quite likely that the center of Neptune is basically diamond. There's a lot of carbon on Neptune. And if you figure out what the pressure and temperature would be at the center, then we think it'd be carbon. Not only would it be diamond, but it would be metallic carbon. So that's diamond that's been melted down. So actually carbon in space has a whole lot of really exotic possibilities for what it's doing and where it appears.
Who would have known that chatting diamonds would lead back to climate change and capitalism?
It seems, Stella, our podcast has a common theme.
We were almost onto something there with the sequestration of carbon, but as Jeff said, the energy needed to produce synthetic diamonds may outweigh these benefits.
And it's also important to consider that for natural diamonds, an estimated 250 tonnes of earth is shifted for every single carat of diamond.
Hopefully you've learnt something new.
I think I'm off to plan a trip to Neptune.
And just like the diamonds we've been talking about, we know for a lot of BFM listeners, you've been under a lot of pressure with lockdown.
Don't worry, soon you'll be your very own diamond. Stay critical, Earthlings.
Looks like everything's going to be all right.
Tomorrow's World with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95 BFM.